This next episode of the podcast is a LinkedIn Heroes live interview with none other than Kim Barrett, the head of Your Social Voice, a Facebook advertising agency that really smash it based out of WA. We discuss the nuts and bolts of how to leverage Facebook marketing in 2020 and Kim's plans to host what just happened this weekend, which was certified Ballers Live with the headline act Mark Boris and a whole bunch of other awesome speakers. It was a fantastic weekend, and it was actually a thrill to be involved to talk about LinkedIn on the second day. Special shout out to anyone who came to the live meetup in Perth to listen to the interview live. It was awesome evening, great bunch of questions. Let Kim and I know what you think of this episode in our social media channels. Kim Barrett's on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and all the rest of it. Without further ado, let's cut straight to the content. Enjoy.
How are you all doing tonight, ladies and gentlemen?
Awesome.
Oh, yeah. Can you do any better than that, do you think? How are you all doing tonight, ladies and gentlemen? There we go. I've been a LinkedIn marketer now for 7 years, I believe. I've been in digital marketing for almost 20 years, and I've been getting a lot of concerns over the last year or two from businesses that have been marketing on Facebook and telling me that they're not getting the same organic reach. 2 years ago, you could start a Facebook page, you get all the likes and all the people following you, and you publish a piece of content and everyone sees it. Anyone remember those days? What happens now? Crickets, right? Yeah, you got to pay for it. That's right. So I thought, in order to be able to deliver some value to these audience that have got all these questions, I need to find someone who knows their shit. So I did all the research online, and I know what questions to ask when I'm looking for a marketer who's good at something. And I managed to find somebody in Perth. And so I did some background checks and asked for some feedback, and it was all came back very positive. And so I approached this gentleman who's here tonight, Kim Barrett, who's down the back of the audience here, and he agreed to do a live LinkedIn Heroes interview with me. So LinkedIn Heroes is a video series where I interview entrepreneurs who are making an impact. And the reason that I started LinkedIn Heroes was because I did this post on LinkedIn. It was quite a interesting post, because I was complaining about complaining, if that makes sense. And so I was like, you know, these people are complaining about stuff on social media. It's very easy to get traction with negative posts on social media. It's very easy to get engagement. And, you know, it did quite well. It went more or less viral on LinkedIn. And I got this message, you know, I got many messages, but one of the messages I got was like, that's all very good you posting that, but what are you actually doing about it, right? And I thought, what a wanker, you know? And then I went to bed, I woke up the next morning, and I was like, yeah, he's got a point. And so I thought, how can I create a system where I'm producing positive content that inspires people, that's actually doing some good on a regular basis? And I thought the easiest way would just be to interview inspiring people. And so that's what I started doing. And I think it was a third interview, I got Dr. John DeMartini, who I've looked up for years. And I mean, if you ever watch the interview, I look so nervous, it's ridiculous. And then I got Jack DeLosa, Kerwin Ray, and Grant Cardone, and all these guys that I look up to, and I've learned so much from business. And some of them I've been on courses with, I do 2 day workshops with them, but I've learned more sitting down with them one-on-one for 15 minutes than I have spending 2 days in one of their courses. So it's been a way that it's given me a lot more than I anticipated. I thought I was just going to deliver some positivity and inspire my audience. And I've actually got all these like whole string of mentors and this peer group from it, which I didn't anticipate. And the latest addition is Kim Barrett. So would everyone please welcome to the stage, Mr. Barrett.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
So Kim, tell us just, and I know that you've done a lot of these, but give us like the 2 minute version of how you got started as an entrepreneur. Tell us what your first venture was.
So please don't record this, don't report me.
It's being recorded.
Yeah, okay. Well, don't report me at least anyway. So the first thing I ever did when I very first got started as an entrepreneur was I figured out there was a game called Pokemon. Does anyone remember Pokemon? Yeah? So I downloaded it and I onto my computer, and there was these little 3.5-inch floppy disks. So I was like, well, everyone's just like, oh, you're playing Pokemon on your computer, that's really cool. How do you do that? And I was like, well, you just download it. Like, I don't know how to download it. I was like, well, if I download it for you and put it on this disk, how much would you pay me? They're like, $2, $3. And this is like, I'm like 8 years old. And I was like, I go to my dad and I was like, can I just borrow 10 floppy disks? And he's like, yeah, sure. Didn't know I was going to sell them and not pay him for it, all the profit, right? So I went and downloaded it, put it on these disks and started selling them. And that's when I first realized, I was like, if you have something that's good, that people want, they'll pay you for it. So that's the very first time I ever made a sale. Happy days. And that kind of pushed me on my journey from there. I stopped plagiarizing, though. Everything else from then was not stolen from other people that I sold, guaranteed. But that was the very first time.
And so was that it for you? Or did you, when you started your career, did you work for anybody else first?
Yeah, well, I was told, apparently, that if you go to university and you do it, and you do it good, that then someone will give you a job. So I was like, easy. And I worked full time. So I was like, cool, if I work full time, I've got experience, people will surely give me a job when I finish. I start applying for all these roles, graduate roles. And they're like, sorry, you don't have enough experience. I'm like, this is a graduate role. This is how I get my experience, right? They're like, yeah, but you just don't have that.
What did you study? What did you study?
International business.
Oh, yeah, international business. What does that mean?
It means I do business internationally.
Yeah.
So, pretty scientific. No, so like I had to learn a little bit about international trade, and I had to learn a little bit of a language.
What
so
language?
A little bit of Indonesian, a little bit of Chinese.
Oh, uppercut ni hao.
Yeah, don't remember any of that. But I was much more focused on working and trying to make money. So as when I was there at university studying that stuff, also had launched my own business. I was also working full time at an accounting firm, setting up companies, trusts, super funds, all that sort of stuff. So that kept me very, very busy. Hence why I dropped out of my languages, because they're like, you need like 10 hours extra a week. And I was like, I also need to eat food to survive. Mm-hmm. So I kind of need to make money somehow. So I went away and started doing all that, launched my several businesses from selling fish, aquarium trade. It's $1 billion industry, guys. My team is giving me crap about that. So yeah, sold fish and bred aquarium fish and sold them, their babies, online, which was cool. Had a supplement company, had a perfume company.
Perfume company, hang on a second. Yeah. How did that come about?
Well, so every time I wanted to do something, I kind of tried to figure out how I could get cheap stuff for myself. And everyone, when they had a birthday, my sister, my mom, my aunties were always like, oh, can you just get us like this like Gucci perfume? I'm like, cool. I want to get like the cool Giorgio Armani one. I wasn't making much money then. I was like, how am I going to figure out how to do this? So because I worked at an accounting firm, I was like, well, if I get ABM, I can get stuff wholesale. So I set up Sense of Smell. Great name. Right, S-E-E-N-T-S, it's pretty cool.
Does it still exist or not?
No. It didn't last very long. But I set it up, started running it, and then I was selling it. But then I realized that, well, once I get someone a perfume or I sell someone a perfume, it's kind of a little while until they want another perfume. It's like, it lasts a little while. It's like, oh, this is not very scalable business for me, right? Because I'm just selling to people I know. So then I was like, okay, I've got to stop doing that. So I was like, no, I'm going to focus on the university. I'm going to become a management consultant, get all this experience. I'm going to become an international business person. Hence why you do international business, right? So tried that. No one would give me a job because I didn't have experience in this particular field. So I was like, okay, I just kept working at companies and I just got bored because I had a pretty strong work ethic from my first job that I had. I was working all day, worked quite hard. So I went to a job and the guy's like, this is going to take you 4 or 5 days. This is the job load. And I went through it and I was like, this is not 5 days of work. This is like 2 days of work. And literally laughed in my face. Like, yeah, good luck. And second day of on the job, I'd finished all work. And I was like, what do I do now? Mm. Like, well, you have to wait. You have to be here because if you leave and an order comes in, we need you to do that job, so you've got to be here. So I was like, what can I do in my spare time? They're like, whatever you want, as long as you're here to answer the phone. That's when I started studying Facebook advertising. That's when I started studying, because I was like, if you're going to pay me to be here, I may as well figure out how else I can make money being here as well, because I've got nothing to do.
So your social voice has been a Facebook marketing company from the get-go.
Look, I tried to do everything at the very beginning, which is my first piece of advice to everyone, is don't do everything.
I actually did that as well.
Yeah. Right. How terrible is that?
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's a very fast way to not make much money. So I was doing social media, I was doing websites, I was doing everything like that. And I was like, no, this is not good. I had a website that I hired someone else to build for me, who then took off with the money. And the client's like, I want my money back because you haven't given me the website. And I was like, oh, okay, so I paid someone for a website and now I have to give you money back as well. It was not a good time. But I started looking, I was like, what's easy? Because I'm a simple, very simple person. Like, I'm like, if there's steps that I can follow and do it really easily, then I'm in. So I was like, Facebook seemed much easier. Logged into Google and I was like, oh, no, not for me, thank you. You stay over there. I'm just going to go on Facebook, easy, set up an ad, run it, people click on it, they buy something or they don't buy something or they give me their
details. But the tables have turned now, haven't they? Isn't Facebook harder? Just no. Google, you put a keyword in, it shows up, boom.
Look, yes, yeah. Guys, if you want to know how to run ads, just do that. Keyword, bang, done. Simples, right? No, so like I would say Facebook is still the easiest ad platform.
Really? Okay.
In my opinion, if you do it right.
Yep. Okay, so how important is the funnel?
Depends on what you term as a funnel. So for everyone, a lot of people, who has heard the term funnel before in relation to businesses? Yeah? I don't know, like, it's probably might ruin the recording, but who can yell out, what does that mean?
It used to mean when you drink a beer really quickly through a tube.
Exactly. When I hired Ken, he's like, I get to do funnels all day. And I was like, no. Websites, just think of it as a website. But a lot of people go, I need to have a funnel, I need to do all these things. But they don't have what's most important, which is verification from the marketplace. So for me, I always say, like, don't spend money on a funnel, right? Russell Brunson will kill me, right? Don't do all this sort of stuff. And I was like, you need to verify that your offer works, that people want it, and that you can sell that product or service there in some way, shape, or form. Until you do that, you do not need to build a big, crazy, sophisticated 17-part funnel.
Yeah. Yeah, I always, I think that the most common problem that I find in businesses is they don't know who they're selling to.
Yeah. They don't, like, because like, what you ask them, what's your niche? And then they're like, oh,
everyone. Anyone with money, anyone who can afford it.
I'm in health and fitness, so everyone. Yeah. 18 to 65.
Yeah, that online, that stuff doesn't work. Like you can target like vegan bodybuilders in Tasmania and you will be successful these days. Like that isn't a good niche. Whereas 20 years ago, I'd be pretty nervous going into business like that. So, a lot of the guys here, a few of the guys here I know are quite active on LinkedIn as well. Have you had any experience remarketing to LinkedIn connections on Facebook?
Yeah, just make sure they're good LinkedIn connections and they're not already pissed off at you. And then they see your ads and then they comment terrible things. No, like that does work. Obviously, it depends on how you do it. Because you used to be able to obviously just export your LinkedIn contacts, upload them as a CSV. And I think they stopped that at some point in time. I don't know if there's probably hacks around that now.
There's hacks.
Yeah, of course. Right. There's many. We'll try and keep this all white hat good stuff. Right?
Oh, yeah, it's all white hat. Yeah. I'm just kidding. It's all white hat.
But I mean, look, and remarketing, retargeting, and things like that, whatever platform you're on is kind of how what you're going to call it. But a lot of people get confused about that as well. And that's the biggest problem. Because someone will come and show me their website. They're like, I need to do retargeting. I'm like, sweet. How many people visited your website?
12.
It's like, that's not really going to give us very, like, there we go. Your money's spent. You're not going to get much audience from that.
So what do you do with a client like that?
Not do retargeting.
Yeah.
So... with that, again, they probably, to me, if you're only getting 12 hits to a website, a very poor example, right? But if you're only getting 12 hits to a website, you haven't verified that your offer's good, you haven't found your right niche, and you aren't converting it. So traffic is never a problem. Hmm. There's millions of billions of people online. It's never a traffic problem. It's probably a niche, or offer, or a copy problem. That's what I teach all my clients. It's like, we call it the NOC method. It's like one of those three things is not working.
Right. And what about branded content? Like, we hear about concepts from guys like Gary Vaynerchuk where he talks about jab, jab, hook. Do you subscribe to that philosophy or do you think everything should have a call to action?
Look, when I have a $150 million company like Gary V, I will jab, jab, jab all day, right? But for all of us as business owners, I'm going to make an assumption I'm in the same category, but we need to make money this week, this month, and this year. That does work, but you have to have something funding and backing you up behind that. If you don't have that, That's a very fast way to go broke. And look, absolutely love Gary, absolutely love Kerwin. They're all about the front-end content. But as well, both of them only went heavy into content when they already had quite successful businesses.
Yeah.
So I think if you take, like, to take from what you see other people do, look at what they did when they're at the same size business as you, not at the business size that they're at now. And that's where I think most people fall down, is because you go, oh, Gary Vee does this, Grant Cardone does that, Nate does this. Yeah, but like, are you at the same size business as them? If you are Gary Vee and you have a $150 million company and a $30 million wine company, cool.
You can post 100 times a day.
Yeah, exactly. Easy. 100 times a day. You've got nothing else to do.
I feel like there's always like, you know, solopreneurs sitting at home, literally just posting 100 times a day.
Oh, yeah. And they're like, oh, soon I'll be able to go to the bank and deposit my followers. It's going to work one day.
What do you mean, soon I'll go to the bank and deposit my followers? I like
yeah.
that. Likes don't pay the bills.
Exactly.
I've got a t-shirt with that written on it somewhere. Okay, so let's go away from Facebook just for a second and talk about more of like your entrepreneurial journey. I know there's a lot of entrepreneurs in the room. What's one of the most important habits or traits that you think you possess that has enabled you to be successful? Because I mean, let's face it, most businesses, they don't last a year. And by 5 years, 90% of businesses are gone. Yeah. So you're obviously doing something right. What do you think?
We just had our fifth birthday 2 weeks ago.
Fifth birthday?
Yeah, thank you.
That's huge.
So that was really cool. So the biggest thing I would say, and a lot of people, this may or may not hit the mark for you guys, but a lot of people don't actually implement things. If someone gives you a path and it's like, you start over here and you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 steps to do it. Most people are like, oh, step one, I'm committed to doing this thing. And then like, oh, but step five, that's really cool. And they jump around all over the place and they don't actually implement things in the order in which they need to be implemented. As I said before, I'm very basic, simple person. So when I had instructions and I looked at Facebook and I was like, cool, I can do things in an order, or growing a business, it's like, cool, do these things. And I just did them in order, to be honest. I'm nothing special, nothing fancy. If you can follow those.
You're an international businessman.
Exactly. Yeah. Says it on the piece of paper on my wall. But if you can follow those things in order and you can actually implement them, most people just don't do the final step of implementation. So I could tell someone how to set up an ad. And I was in a group with a guy for 2 years. This is a Facebook marketing group. He didn't set up an ad. And the end of it is like, man, money is getting pretty tight. I was like, man, why don't you just run an ad? Like, you learning Facebook advertising. Like, surely you would do something. No, didn't do it.
Did he post all, because I think there's a lot of people that like are still waiting for everything to go back to the way it was. They got a bias for what worked 2 years ago, when they could get organic reach, and they're literally like still creating these videos, getting the subtitles done, putting on the lovely captions and posting and not sponsoring them.
Yeah. And it's, look, we all know it's gonna be pay to play. Like, you know, I'm sure that you're probably feeling LinkedIn's gonna head that way eventually at some point. Who knows if they do, if they will or they won't. But for me, it's like, if I pay for something, I can pretty closely predict it.
Yeah.
If I'm even like then, like I was getting organic reach, I was not relying on organic reach. I was not thinking about organic at all. Because if I did, I was like, well, I have to cross my fingers and hope that someone's going to take an action by seeing this. They're going to watch this video and then they're going to message me or they're going to opt in or whatever it might be. I've always been, and whether that's right or wrong, I've always been a pay to play person, because it's like, cool, if I can spend $10 and then 10 people click on it and then 2 people give me their details and I call those 2 people, I can predict that. And I can spend $10, $20, $100, $1,000, $10, $10,000.
Yep.
But I can't be like, go organic. And just like, wait, like, you know, I would stress out. I'll freak out if that happened.
Okay. So tell me about Facebook Messenger. Is that the same scenario? You use paid campaigns on Facebook Messenger to advertise to people as well?
Yeah. So driving to your business Facebook page, Messenger inbox, is a huge, huge place at the moment. Facebook, I just got a product update from their team yesterday, and that is a big option for them. So they used to allow you, or you still can use things called bots, right? So this is not like the bad bots that get you kicked off
like
of
a
Instagram.
Robot.
Like a robot, yeah. So a little thing that automates a task. So if someone asks you a question, it can automatically respond to them. If someone clicks a button, it can give them a link, whatever it might be. Facebook themselves are bringing that internally to their own Messenger apps. So they're building their own automatic response system, or lead generation system, they're calling it, into Messenger. So they are heavily pushing people towards Messenger. because it allows for you to have a more personalized experience.
That's interesting. So how do you find out information like that? Is that through Mark Zuckerberg's talks on YouTube and stuff?
I just normally send him a message like, hey, Zucks bro, what's going on? Give me the update. So we are very lucky that we're a preferred partner with Facebook.
Oh, okay.
So a lot of times we do testing, but when you manage a certain level of spend when it comes to Facebook ads, they give you a guy. And this is your guy, and he gives you all the updates.
Ah.
So I ask him all the tricky questions, and then they give me the updates. We normally probably get them, what are we now, February almost. So we get them probably 3 months before the general market, but the general market will only get an update once per year, which is at the F8 Developer Conference, which covers Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, and that's generally in April, May. That's when everyone gets a big update, but we get quarterly updates throughout the year of what's going on, what they're focusing on, what their recommendations are.
Okay, so we got a whole bunch of questions from people that registered. Like, I've got a few of them in my mind. So one of them was like, how do you customize ads for mobile devices?
So the best thing is to actually look at it on a mobile device. Again, like a lot of people will not test things or measure things. So if you put an ad up, like you can click a button and it'll send it to your phone and you can actually look at and see what it actually looks like. So for me, and then when our team are doing anything, we've got our graphic designer Anita here, who spends a lot of time focusing on doing this. Like, we'll always test it. We'll make sure it looks good on mobile. We'll look at what it looks like on desktop. We'll look at what it looks like in Messenger and Stories. There's like, I think now they've just opened up 5 new placements across the whole Instagram family. And each one of those should be and can be customized to that specific placement.
How often does Facebook change its algorithm?
Like, I feel like everyone just loves the word algorithm these days. Like, something happens, algorithm did it. Late to work this morning, algorithm, couldn't get in the car. But I mean, look, if an algorithm changes, you probably realize 3 months after it changes. Like, it will happen, they'll test and measure data and stuff will happen, and you'll be like, oh, have you noticed that this happened? It's like, yeah, that was like 3-4 months ago that change happened. So it's never the fact that an algorithm has changed, something's happened. It's normally, probably at least once a quarter that it would happen when they roll out their new updates, when they offer new components, when it comes to their suite and their family of apps. That's when something will change. So it's never going to be like algorithm set, just let it roll.
I heard somewhere that Zuckerberg like empowered developers to like up to a certain amount of people be able to like take a sample of members and just like run certain stuff without getting permission. And if it like hit certain statistics and it would escalate to a place where it would actually need someone's attention to approve it.
Yeah, they do a lot of beta testing. So they'll beta test stuff all the time. Some aspects, if it's on the paid side, we can request and get access and test it out first. If it's a general, like I said, like general populace type update, they'll roll it out, but normally in a decent sample size. So for example, when they've been testing their Facebook payment platform, they've been rolling that out in India. So India's been the focus for them because they know they have a lot of people that send money to each other. They've had to use Western Union and all these things for years that hasn't been that good. They decided to roll it out there first so they could get as much data as possible.
Okay, and what are you excited about in your business at the moment?
Excited / stressed. We have a very big event coming up in February that's expensive. Certified Ballers Live, which is going to be pretty epic. So,
do you get a certificate at the end of it saying you're a baller?
Look, if you make it through the 2 days, you do. There's a whole quiz. It's like cool.
Do you have to have a Bentley?
What color was Kim's pocket square? Yeah, you do need a Bentley or a Rolls, one of the two. No, that's probably the most exciting thing. And to be honest, everyone's asking me like, what's the goals for 2020? Like, what else is on the cards? I'm like, I just need to get that done. Then ask me. Like, ask me that on the 1st of March, 2nd of March, and then we'll be able to tell you.
Yeah, Mark Boris is coming along, isn't he?
Yeah, Big Marky. Yeah, he's coming over, so that's going to be good fun. We are pretty close friends now, so.
Oh, good.
Yeah, not really good.
You, him, and Zuck.
Yeah, exactly. We've got a 3-way WhatsApp group. It's pretty cool.
Awesome. Okay, so look, in business, we all encounter lots and 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 lots of challenges. What's one perhaps that you've had to overcome that you can share with the audience that maybe will give us a bit of inspiration?
I'm trying to remember. The one from this week, last this morning. Probably the biggest challenges for me is like when everyone comes into our team, we're a pretty small team. So the maximum size we've had is about 14. Our team at the moment is about 10. I become pretty good friends with them because we're in the office working all day. So the biggest challenge for me has been being okay with firing people at the point when they need to be fired.
Mm-hmm.
Because I got told this quote once and I was like, this is a pretty dang good quote, which is that the most expensive thing in your business is a good employee. Because if they're a bad employee, you fire them. If they're a great employee, you're always promoting them, you're excited and being around them. If they're good, just good, like so-so, they stick around. They're not excellent, they're not bad, they're just kind of like the status quo. They're doing what needs to be done. And we had a point where we, like, when things are working well, this is why I have a general manager now, like, I'll just do what that's like, cool, I'm like, yeah, crank up the ads, hire all the people, like, you know, like, get a new office, whatever it is. So now Christy does that, she's like, oh, Kim, you can't do any of those things now. You have no power. Yeah, I'm the boss now. Look at me. I am the captain now. So she will control me. So, but at that time, I was hiring lots of people, and I had to let them go. And I was like, this is the worst because they've been working with us for like 6 months, 12 months, getting to know them and their families, and being able to, like, for lack of a better word, to pull the trigger on that and be able to do that. So I've gotten much better at it now, but that was probably the biggest one for me, because if a relationship in any way, shape, or form isn't working, you need to be able to end it, right? You need to be able to pull the trigger and go, okay, this is not going to work anymore for us. But I always think that I at least do a decent job of being like, not just like, chuck you out. It's like, you know, one of them went on to start their own agency, which is awesome. A couple of them have done really crazy different stuff. One owns a winery now, coffee shop, all cool stuff. So, and still chat to them every now and again. So,
I can totally relate to that. I actually admire you for saying that, because when I started, I grew my team like to 9 people within under a year. And my business coach was like, you need to fire this person and this person. And I was like, no, I'm not firing them, like, because we couldn't afford the cash flow. It would get to the end of the month, and the last week I would just go out and sell as much as I could to pay everyone. And then it was just like 1 month, I just didn't do it, you know?
Mm.
And one person didn't get paid. And it just changed the whole culture of the business, and it was like it imploded. But if I'd done what the business coach asked me and made the tough call, which is uncomfortable, we wouldn't have had to do that. So, yeah, I mean, if you don't do it, that's what happens. Important decision. Next question is, what is the worst piece of advice that you've ever received in business?
The worst piece of advice. Don't worry about your cash flow, that's fine. You'll, like, the money will, don't worry about paying the taxes.
Who told you that? Grant Cardone.
Yeah. It's okay, you make your money tax-free, mate, when you come to Australia. You don't have to pay taxes afterwards. But no, because a lot of people will say, when you get into a business and you're starting and you're running and you're earning money, it's very easy. It's like, cool, if you've got, I've made 100 grand this year and I've got 10 grand aside for my GST that I've got to pay, it's very easy for you to be like, but I need to do this other thing here. So I'll just take a little bit of that money and I'm going to spend that. And then it will eventually, like, catch back up. And I could be the only one, but that does not happen, right? So, like, now we've got things in place where we have accounts I can't even see. I don't even know if there's money there. I get all stressed out. Chris is like, no, we've been putting money away for that. Okay, cool. So I don't even know that exists, so it's much better for me. But, you know, a lot of people are like, no, you've got to do whatever it takes. And it's like, no, that's not actually the right answer. Because it's better to grow a little bit slower and be up to date with everything, make sure everything's managed and understand cash flow really, really well, than being like, oh, okay, now I'm a year behind and I've got 6 BAS payments on payment plans and I haven't done my taxes for 5 years and blah, 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 blah. So for me, especially because I used to work in an accounting firm, that would stress me out a little bit. And some of the advice I would be, it's like, well, cool, you want to do this. You've got money in the account to do that. Do it. And I'm very, like, when it comes to buying things, I'm very easily sold. I'm the easiest sale ever for something that I want. So it's like, cool, I'll just do it.
What do you spend your money on?
Everything. I don't buy anything for myself, but as a business thing, I'm like, oh, yes. Like today for our event, I was like, I need this switcher, I need this new screen thing and all this sort of stuff. And Christy's like, are you sure we do? I'm like, yeah, it's a necessity. Have to have it.
Okay, somebody's asked, why do you do what you do?
because I think that business owners should be able to focus on doing what they do best. No one ever got into business to become a bookkeeper, an accountant, a marketer, unless you're a marketer or an advertiser, right? You got in business to do something that you love. And I think that that's what you should be able to do every single day. So if I at least help someone put a marketing system into their business and they have that thing taken care of, at least they can focus on doing what they do best and help people how they help them the best.
Yeah, awesome. Let's see what else we've got here. What are the key changes we will need to make to stand out on Facebook in the new year?
Again, like the, if you get the basics right, everything else does not matter. You can have an algorithm change, you can have a platform change. Like if you literally do and focus on your niche, the offer you have and the way that you articulate it, the copy that you write or you speak, if you're doing video, whatever that might be, you're going to win and you're going to beat everyone else. The worst things that I do is because Facebook ads are so, I'll say easy, right? Some of you might disagree, but because they're easy to do and put up and launch, what happens with a lot of people is they just chuck something up. Spend $20, $50, $100. Some people, you know, put the wrong budgets in, they spend too much money and they're like, can I get money back from Facebook? No. Mark's already spent that money, sorry. So when that happens, a lot of people go, they get stressed out and they're like, I need the newest, the latest, the greatest. And so if you do the fundamentals really well, you'll be successful on any platform. It doesn't matter what changes, algorithm, etc. You have the right niche, the right offer in front of them, and you write or articulate it in the right way, you're going to win. So I always, and it's like, everyone wants the sexy answer, but that is the, like, that's an unsexy answer, but it's the best answer.
Do they have like engagement pods on Facebook?
No, I mean, look, you've got them for LinkedIn, Instagram, all that sort of stuff. Not really.
I think they stamped down on them quite a lot, didn't they?
Yeah, and it's like, it doesn't have as much of an effect anymore. Like I definitely, like I will, if you want a little thing for your personal page, does anyone here use their personal page for business? Like connect with other business owners and stuff like that? Few people.
All my real friends have unfriended me.
Yeah, they're like, I'll call you if I need to speak to you. But so, like, if I'm doing something organically on my personal profile or something like that, I will put up something in advance one day, get engagement, get people interested again. Like, it might be something like really nice or easy, or just like a really good photo that I know people will like, or something about, you know, my family, my little godson or something like that, you know, in their little suit.
Godsons always get the likes.
Exactly, yeah. Right? Little cute godson wearing a suit. Get lots of likes. And then the next day I'll share something about an offer or something I want people to take action upon. So it's kind of like seeding the engagement before you do something big. It doesn't work as well on pages. Definitely works in groups. If anyone uses Facebook groups, there's a little big changes coming to that at the end of the year that I'm not allowed to talk about, but there is.
Okay, so if you were allowed to talk about them, what would you say?
If I hadn't signed an NDA with Facebook. Groups are going to become like normal Facebook, as much as I will say.
Yeah, cool. So is that like a subtle hint to start a Facebook group? No comment.
I'm not going to tell you to start one because they are a lot of work, but if you have one, yeah, I'd be building up a lot of engagement in mine.
Excuse me. So how do you stand out from the noise, right? So like you're looking down the news feed and you've got all these different posts and you happen to show up. Mm. What's going to make somebody click on your ad?
Can I do like a little social experiment with everyone? Can I, like,
that's a good idea. Yeah, yeah, that's
so
a good idea.
Does everyone have their phone? Silly question, every single one of you.
Does anyone not have their phone?
Like I've been on it for the last hour, mate. Why you've been dribbling up there? Okay. So if you guys all grab your phones out and open the Facebook news feed.
Oh yeah. This is so embarrassing. I've like not got Facebook on my phone.
Tells me to come in and talk about Facebook. Sorry, I'm gonna delete LinkedIn when Jesus. I get home. So everyone got their phone? Yeah? Open your feed. So the Facebook app, not Messenger. Don't get distracted by the cute pics. Open the feed and then swap your phone with the person next to you. Yeah, do it. Some of you might have three, you might need to go into threes and swap them around. And then just go for a little bit of a flick. Right? And then swap them back. Swap them back again. Give them back to them. Don't send messages to people unsolicited. Now, what you would all notice, right, is that it's, would you agree that it's completely different to yours?
Yes.
Yeah? So even though you're very similar people at an event, you want to improve or grow a business, you are someone who is interested in growing businesses or entrepreneurship and whatnot, it's completely different. Similar age groups, whatever it is, doesn't really matter. But what you'll notice is completely personalized to you. So your news feed is completely personalized to you. So if you're not doing personalized marketing, that is where you're going to screw up. So you don't actually have to stand out in the news feed. You just have to hit the nail on the head for one person. That's all you have to do. So if you can focus on one person, one niche, I'm going to say it again, one offer, write it in the right way, you are going to win. Because it's all about personalization. If you are going general, and this is where I literally, like, our Facebook rep is great, and I love him, but this is where we fight all the time. Because he's like, nah, you need to go, like, you need to just target everyone and do this and this. And I was like, this is not good. Like, I gave him this example, and he's like, oh, this is a throwaway marketer comment. Just test it. Just test it. And I was like, oh, come on, you work there. Tell me the answers.
And so how specific do you go? Let's say, for example, you are a digital marketing agency, and you target the medical industry. Do you do one ad for dentists, one ad for surgeons, one ad, like how specific do you go?
Yeah, well, I mean, it depends on what are they going to be seeing in their feed, right? So you've got to be able to blend in with that. You've also got to remember, though, that is a social context, right? So I liken it to being at a bar. So if you're going to go up to someone and have a conversation with them at a bar, number one, don't be creepy. Number two, don't insult them.
I'm like, always creepy in bars.
Rules of life, yeah. So this is why he doesn't do Facebook. He does LinkedIn, right? He's just creeping and sliding your DMs to get you. Yeah,
100%.
Message you again. But if you do that and you really are specific, the dentist that reads it, there may not be hundreds of thousands of them, but the dentist that read that goes, oh, this is for me. This is my personalization, right? So like even we work a lot and help a lot of new home sales consultants and stuff like that as well. And they're the most difficult because they're like, I need to sell the home to everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone. I'm like, no, you don't.
Yeah.
I was like, choose niche. And literally one of them did this, went from selling 2 homes a month. He did 9 homes in 8 weeks, so like $90,000 in commissions from him, just by focusing on having a niche. Because before he was going to everyone.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you've used it in your own business. I mean, focusing on Facebook marketing, like it's worked similar for me. Like, you know, when I started LinkedIn training and LinkedIn speaking, there was no one else in Australia doing it. So when the LinkedIn thing came up, they just hop on Google, it's like one guy, I get the call, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just sort of grown from there. I don't know if my speaking career would have taken off so much if I kept being just a general marketer.
Well, no one wants general, right? Because it's like, same as that, like, if I have an ear problem, I don't want to go to the general practitioner. I was like, give me an ENT guy. I want all the problems solved. Right. And then same, even now, it's like when we're doing a LinkedIn campaign with you and a few people mentioned me, like, oh, who does your LinkedIn campaigns? I've been thinking about using like these really good guys in Perth, Bibby Consulting. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Legends. Yeah.
So because you are, and it's easy to give referrals, right? It's easy for people to talk about you. Heaps of people will go, oh, Kim does that. He's like that Facebook guy, does Facebook stuff. Like Ed, who's over here, is the Google guy. It's like, you know, yourself, LinkedIn.
Yeah.
It's very hard to be like, oh, well, I need to grow my business. It's like, oh, you could go and speak to this generalist marketing company over here. Or this guy, Pete, lives down the road. I'm pretty sure he does like websites, SEO, Google, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
Yeah, absolutely. Kim, if you could be a superhero, who would you be and why?
That's a good one.
You look prepared for this answer.
You're like, well, you're thinking about this. I mean, this is my daily team huddles in the morning. It's like, guys, what kind of superhero would I be? I would probably be the Hulk. So what I'm going to go with.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think because...
What? Do you get angry, Kim?
No, I don't. Kim doesn't. Right. You don't want to meet the other guy. No, I just think it's pretty cool. He's a super switched on guy. Obviously, Eric Banner. No, Bruce Banner. So he's super switched on guy. Obviously, he changes and things like that. But I think that's what you've got to be in life. So you've got to be adaptable to circumstances. Like, you can't be the calm, cool, mannered guy if the world is being taken.
So you're like not creepy, but then, you know, once you lure them in, you get angry.
Yeah.
And, no, he's not at the start. No, he's not. He gets a little bit weird later on, but that's all good.
Yeah,
I haven't had that answer before.
I know, that was research. I was like, what can I say
that was unique? Heard? Yeah, I asked Grant Cardone. I said, who, which superhero would you be? He said, Grant Cardone.
Yeah, sounds about right.
All right. So what we're going to do now is I'm going to stop asking questions and we're going to let you guys ask some questions. The lovely Gemma Goodchild. Can we have a round of applause for Gemma, please?
I'm going to run the microphone so that we can capture the content on video.
please raise your hands if you would have a question. We've got Shield down the back there as first. Right down the back. There he is. Doesn't Shield look dashing tonight, ladies and gentlemen? Shield is our resident speaking coach, who is very particular with who he works with, because he did fire me as a client, because apparently I don't listen.
I told him to come back when he's ready. That's what I said. Kim, look, it was great to hear from you. When I took a look at your bio, there was a section there which said, I think you did one of your first transactions, and it was close to 50K.
Yeah.
Can you talk us through the strategy? What did you do? What was that transaction, and what was the process you went through for such a maximum amount?
It was 100% accident, but I'll tell you how the accident happened. So, as I told you guys before, I used to be involved in the fish world, the dirty underbelly of the animal kingdom. So, I used to run a forum. So we would run a forum, and back then there was not really Facebook, no Facebook groups, all that sort of stuff. The forum, and they got a lot of traffic, and I became like a moderator, super moderator, and then I was really good friends with the admins of this forum, and they said, Kim, we're going to go out of business, right? And I mean, like, what do you mean it's not a business? Like, no, we've got to pay servers, we've got to pay costs, we've got to pay hosting, all this sort of stuff. And, like, and we also have committed to prizes to people and all this stuff, so we need to make about 40 grand, $40,000-$50,000 in like cash and prizes. And I was like, cool, so what do we need? Sponsors. I was like, okay, Google, what is a sponsor? I was like, 15. I was like, okay, so people are going to give us money for stuff. Why would people give us money? Was the question I asked. They're like, well, we get so many people to our website every single month, like, here's the statistics. And I was like, cool, I'm just going to take a screenshot of those statistics, paste it into Paint, right? And edit it a little bit, put some words on it. So this is our statistics for this month. Done. It was very sophisticated. So I did that. And then I was like, cool, who would pay money for people that like fish? Like people that sell fish stuff. So I was like, what are the online retailers? What are the local retailers? All that sort of stuff. So I went searching through, I don't think it was Google, it was like using like Ask Jeeves or something terrible like that. I was like, what are like fish places around, fish brands? And I found a list of about 100. So I went through manually copying and pasting every single one and set up a beat. Like, I was like, to Kim. So I emailed myself and BCC'd everyone. Not the best way to send out a bulk email, I learned afterwards. So this was just like Turcock and I, so I was like copying and pasting every single one. It took me until about 1 o'clock in the morning. So I wrote an email, and the email went something like this. Hi. Because I didn't know their name, so I was sending them to 100 people. Hi, cover. I was like, I am a super moderator on this cichlid forum, which is a type of fish. Every single month, here's a screenshot. We have this many people come to our site. We are looking for only 10 sponsors for our website because that's all we can fit at the top, like bar. That's all that we could fit. I didn't know that we could rotate them and stuff like that. I was like, only 10. So if you are keen, what I need you to do is I need you to send $4,000 to this PayPal account, or send me what your commitment is from your products and services for us. This email is going to 100 people. So get in quick. And so I was like, I didn't know I was like using scarcity and all these cool marketing tactics and stuff like that. But I wrote the emails because it's the truth. I was like, I send this to 100 people. We only have 10 spots. The next morning, I woke up and then I got a message from the moderator on MSN Messenger. Check that before you go to school in the morning. Right? So I jumped up there and he's like, Kim, what did you do? And I was like, did I not BCC everyone? Did I CC everyone? He's like, no, we've got like nearly $40,000 in cash in our PayPal account and all these products and stuff being committed. And I was like, I can make money on the internet. This is amazing. So that was the very first hotline sale I ever made. It was one email to 100 people, which went and copy and pasted all their things. And I didn't know that what I was, you know, doing marketing stuff and using advertising copy and all that sort of stuff. I was like, cool, this is legitimately what it is. This is what I have available. You want it? And that's like the simplest way to ever make a sale. It's like, cool, so a lot of people complicate things way too much. Overcomplicate things. It's like, hey, I do this for these people. Would you like to pay? And then they did, so I was pretty happy. And I was like, oh, I still have to go to school. They're like, Kim, we're going to give you, what are they giving? We're going to give you this little pump and these plants as a thank you. So I gave me $40,000, like, oh, cheeky 400, come on. But that was all right, I was happy with that. So that was the first ever online transactional sale that I ever made. So I was quite happy. And that's what got me more into
online marketing, advertising, and everything like that.
You got a taste for it.
Yeah.
And there's a whole bunch of stuff I imagine that you tried that like that, that didn't work out so well.
Yeah, look, I was very lucky. And then, well, I was just super confident then. I was like, this is easy. So I started messaging heaps of people. I was like, we need more sponsors. And then I started being like, I was like, oh, you know, the Australian Cichlid Society, they're committing this. And I started like, I'm using other elements. And these guys are already doing this, so surely you want to match that all better. Like, yeah, we'll do that. I was like, yes.
Nice.
So I started working. And yeah, but that was, I only applied that strategy for that business like 5 times, and every time it worked. And then I forgot about it, to be honest. I never really did it again until recently for our event to try and get sponsors. So,
yeah. Cool. All right, we'll move on to the next question. Raise your hand if you've got a question. Down the side here, Jenna, we run a mic down there. What's your name?
Scott.
Scott, what do you do, Scott?
Internet marketing.
Oh, cool.
Through training and things, yeah.
So, just you touched on before about talking about sort of, you know, bookkeeping and doing the day-to-day sort of stuff. How and when did you learn to step away from that? You know, obviously I have that, I need to kind of do it myself, and, you know, you've got the cash flow, but it's that stepping away, or you're sort of bordering on the cash flow. How did you take that leap and get all the amazing team in?
Great question. So first I figured out the biggest thing that I sucked at, and that was definitely graphic design. So I used to literally put stuff in paint and screenshot little bits and like try and add borders, and all my borders were uneven and stuff like that. So I hired my first person was to take that over, which was someone who used to work with us, and now I need to take it over from them. But that was my very first part. I was like, this is what I suck at. And then I looked at the next thing. I was like, what can I get someone to do for me? So I'm a very big fan of old school strategy of the contra deal, which is basically a service exchange. So, So it's like we've had cleaners for free. I've got a free Range Rover. Lots of very cool things that I've done in exchange for other services. I'm getting new roller blinds put in on the 1st of February for someone. Found him on Airtask, came in, he's like, oh, do you do marketing? I'm like, yeah, do you want marketing? Cool. How much are you going to charge me for the blinds? It's like, oh, $3,000. I was like, cool, my program's $5,000. You want to like swap it out? And he's like, yeah. I was like, oh, cool, done.
And you got a Range Rover as well?
Yeah, I got a Range Rover, which is pretty cool. I had a Nissan X-Trail for about 6 months from brand new from Nissan. Because I believe that if you can provide someone with value that they would pay someone else for, surely you can do a fair and equitable exchange. So for me, another first one of why I shared that story is because I found an accountant and bookkeeper, and I was like, cool. Well, that was similar age, similar stories. And I was like, awesome, what are you doing this? And I was like, cool, so how do you get clients, man? So I don't really get new clients. I have to door knock and networking events. I was like, cool. So if I can get you clients, is that something that will float your boat? Yeah, that would be pretty cool. So I could direct, like, I need help with bookkeeping, accounts and stuff. What do you say we do a little contra deal here, we do an exchange of services? And he's like, yeah, absolutely, all in. So then they took over for us straight away, and so we had free accounting for about a year, and I did their advertising for them for about a year. So, and again, similar to how I got the sponsorship and the first payment for the forum that I worked for, I was like, I'm always willing to ask. And the reason I got to interview Grant Cardone as well, as did you, interview about 15 people. Most people did not ask him for an interview. He said, I want to be interviewed. I was like, cool, can I interview you? He said, yes. Right, it was pretty straightforward.
It was a bit more challenging for me to get the interview. I had to ask about 100 people, but yeah.
Well, I think you did it fly away towards the end of his period of time here.
Yeah.
At the very first person to interview him in Australia had never done a podcast before, didn't have a podcast, and brought in a TV camera to record the podcast interview with him. But he's like, I didn't know this was this guy's first podcast. He asked me, he said, yeah, I'll put you on my podcast. Did tell me it's the very first podcast episode I ever did.
Yeah.
But he's like, that's cool.
But the only cameraman I could find last minute, because I was told the night before I had to do the interview, I was in Perth to fly to Sydney that morning, and the only guy I could get on Airtasker, so the camera filming me wasn't on, the audio for me wasn't on, and so it's like, it's all of Grant, but anyway, I did my best with what I had.
But that's it, and you still ask for it, right?
Yeah.
It's like you didn't not ask for it, a lot of people won't, and so it's like, cool, like, if I want to do an exchange of services, something's cool.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, and now a lot of, so it's funny now because I've done a few videos about it on YouTube and stuff. It's like, I got a free Range Rover and tell the story. And now, like, probably once a week, someone will be like, Kim, I hear that you're into contra deals. It's like, I have this, and I'm like, ah, oh, now everyone asks me for it. Sometimes I get good ones.
Because I really want a new Bentley. Like, I'm just wondering if there's a contra deal.
Do you think Bentley need LinkedIn lead generation?
I mean, I don't know. I think so. Now you've opened up the door to possibilities.
Yeah. It's pretty fun. It's like, hey, if anyone has cool stuff, hit me up, Kim Barrett.
I won't be getting the Bentley unless I can do a contra deal, that's for sure. Yeah. Well, not yet. Not yet. Yeah. Anybody else got a question? In the middle, hit them. What's your name?
Neil.
Neil, how you going?
Looking at you?
Yeah, I'm pretty good.
Yourself? Kim, you touched earlier on organic reach from Facebook and the fact that it's not a good method to use, but we do real estate, and some of the deals that we do, we'll record a walkthrough of what we've done, and then we'll post them into specific real estate related groups. And they sort of top out around 3,000 to 3,500 views, but the groups that they're going have got like up to 25,000 to 30,000 members.
Yeah.
So why does it stop at 3,000 to 3,500 no matter how long the video is or the content that it provides?
So Facebook is a big fan of native in whichever way you're using their platform. So for example, you're using a Facebook group, right? In an ideal world, if you were kind of siphoning off their traffic, which is a whole other thing I'll talk about in a sec, you posted that directly into the Facebook group, you probably would get maybe 10,000 views. But because you're posting it to your page and then you're sharing it into the group, if that's my assumption there is correct, that is why it's going to be limited, because that is still in groups, which is a separate Facebook app, separate part of their family, that's not organic. That's shared in from a page.
Yeah.
And you are kind of like, it's actually a sneaky strategy a lot of people use to siphon out people from groups, because as soon as someone watches your video, then they go into your retargeting audience that you can hit with other ads, things like that as well. So you can't increase that, but you've already got them. So I would be, if I was you and doing something like that, I would be promoting that video with a lookalike audience, which is basically taking them to Facebook, creating an audience first of people that watch that video to 100%, see which ones are actually interested. Then what I would do is I plug that into Facebook and go, hey, Facebook, find me another 170,000 people, 183,000 people in Australia that most closely look like these people that have already watched 100% of my video. And then I'll run my video to them, targeting only the specific suburbs that I work in for.
Lookalike audience, is that effective, are they?
Facebook will argue, but this is data I got before Cambridge Analytica. So Facebook has 1,000,000 points of data on every single person. Right? So think about, they know who your friends are, your family members are, your cousins, uncles, aunties are. We're all here. Our GPS technically is on. They all know that we're at WeWork.
They don't know where I am.
Exactly. You're the security mode on. So you don't have Facebook, man, so they're not going to track you, right? You deleted it. But so they have all that information. So they take that and they match the points of the people that watch the video with all that data that they have. And then they give you a portion of an audience between 1 and 10% of the population. 1% being about 183,000 up to like 1.83 million. And then you can run ads specifically to those people that most closely look like them. And then you target that down again to Perth in specific suburbs. You're going to get those people anyway.
Another question over here. What's your name? You look familiar.
I'm an ex-Julia.
Hi, Julia.
What? Oh, Jesus. What is your take on Facebook bots as a marketing tool?
As in messenger bots?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love them. We were one of the, I'm pretty sure it was like one of the guys. We were one of the first guys in a group of people in Australia to build them. They do work very effectively. Obviously, there's a bunch of changes happening that were actually meant to happen probably seven days ago, on the 15th of January. We meant to no longer be able to do a whole bunch of things. They pushed that out to about the 3rd of March now. So what that means is, because Facebook is worried that people will then stop using Messenger, but they are encouraging people to use it and use bots as well. So they're kind of building their own version of bots in Messenger anyway. Using lead generation tools, you'll be able to broadcast directly from Facebook Messenger. You won't need a bot creator like ManyChat, ChatFuel, or anything like that. You'll be able to do it all directly within Facebook, which is where they're going. Probably, I would say, two years probably, not like this April, by next April, when they have their FA conference, I would assume that they'll be rolling out their own version of those things, which is why all of those platforms now, all the bot creators are adding on SMS, email, all the other options that you can have to try and mitigate their risk. So if Facebook take away Messenger from them, they still have all these other options for you. So I love them. You can use them really effectively. the time frame of using them specifically for certain actions, like getting people to comment on posts, messaging them via once they comment, things like that, which we used to go crazy with and they did very well at the beginning. They're going to kind of phase out a little bit and they're going to send people directly into Messenger. Because Facebook categorized their apps in two ways. When I just talk about newsfeed and Messenger, newsfeed is like the town square, right? That's your digital town square. You can yell, you can scream, you can ring bells, you can grab people's attention. Messenger is like the living room. So they're very selective about what they live in. This is their categorization, not mine. I'm just making it up. This is what they released at their last conference. So by understanding that means you're gonna be kind of like a little bit more chill in Messenger. So a lot of people abuse bots. Grant Cohen is a great example of one that ruined bots for everyone. So by understanding that, like, use them, but just be aware that there's a lot of changes gonna be coming to them. So if you have big bot lists, like, get them out of Messenger onto somewhere you own emails, phone numbers, etc., sooner rather than later.
So when you say a bot list, like, so do people need to sign up specifically to your Messenger to be able to get your messages?
So as soon as you message me on my business page, you become a subscriber, similar to an email list of subscribers, which means that I can broadcast to you, I can schedule things to go out to you. If I'm really bad, I can harass you and send you multiple messages all the time. So it allows you to build another list. But again, that's a owned list by Facebook. So if Facebook takes your page away, unlucky, you're 10,000, I've had people with 100,000 subscribers on their Messenger bot, Facebook takes away their page Messenger access.
So you can't import the starter and custom audience and send a message?
I mean, you can create a custom audience of people inside Messenger, which is what they're trying to push people towards, rather than broadcasting messages and then run ads to them separately.
Yep.
But you can't import anything into Messenger. You can export.
Okay. We're getting a bit technical. Wait, any more questions? Yep, here we go. What's your name?
Emma.
Hi, Emma.
So, very interesting talk. Thank you for joining us tonight. Just have a question around small businesses starting out from day one. You know, new market, new offering, it's all very new. Mm-hmm. What guidance would you give them in terms of that very precious little dollar amount that they have to spend to start building that reach or start converting those sales? What would you suggest in the Facebook realm?
Do you want reach or do you want sales?
Well, sales for small businesses, yeah, definitely. Try and get some cash in the door.
So my big thing is working out what people want and reverse engineering it. So I'm going a little bit of a rant tangent for a second, if that's okay. So let's just say that you go, cool, every month I want to generate 2 sales. Right. Actually, can we use this as a live example? Like, what is this for your business? Rather than me just talking.
I've got one in general you can use. It's underwater photography. Cool. They just to say selling images.
Selling images?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So there's two realms of stuff when it comes to Facebook and any advertising in general. You've got like a product based and a service based one. Product based one's probably slightly a little bit hard. But what I would do is probably pivot my underwater photography and sell it as higher ticket packages of like big ones. So I would sell expensive underwater photography if this is going to be me. So what I would do is go, cool, let's just say I want to sell 5 pieces of photography or 5 pieces of art, I'll say, per month, and the art's worth $500 to $1,000. My first question I ask myself is, how much am I willing to spend to make that sale? Let's say that it costs me 50% of that, right? So it costs me $2,500 to make the $5,000 of my actual time, energy, effort, equipment, canvases, whatever it might be. And it's like, cool, I'm willing to spend maybe $500 to make those sales. Cool. If I give you someone who's interested in what you do and wants to buy it, how many people out of 10 would buy it? Let's just give you a worst case scenario, 10%. Right? So I need to make 5 sales. I'm willing to spend $500. 10% is my conversion rate. Means I need to get 50 leads. 50 leads. I'm willing to spend $500. It's $10 a lead. I would set up a lead generation type ad to verify that I've got the right audience that want to buy it. And you can do a whole bunch of e-commerce stuff afterwards and retargeting and like canvas ads and all different sorts of stuff. But I would start there to verify that I have the right niche, the right offer and the right copy. So hopefully, if I've done my homework right and I've identified the right niche offer copy, I would generate myself 50 leads. I would convert 10% of them into 5 buyers that would pay me and I would make $5,000. That would be the process that I would go through so that every dollar that I spend, I know what I'm spending it on. you'll probably go through a little bit more at the very first time you do that, because you need to make sure you're finding the right niche, that you're articulating it correctly. But I do it that way. Then there's a whole other suite of e-commerce type strategies that I would use if I was going to run e-commerce campaigns to try and get people to buy products for maybe like $10 to $100. But if I was selling something expensive, I would always have a phone conversation with someone. That's my preference. Mm.
Cool. Thanks.
Does that answer your question? Oh, that's pretty good.
Sounds so easy.
anybody else got a question? We've got a hand that's half up. Oh, no.
Ken doesn't want to ask a question.
There's somebody down the back, Gemma, that's got a hand up.
Thanks. I've got a question about interest targeting. How do you find interest targeting in recently? Because
using interest targeting. Good question.
And how do you have any suggestions how to find the right target audience by using interest targeting?
Yeah, great question. So how would you find the right audience using interest targeting to target people on Facebook? I spent a lot of time before, like my record for setting up an ad is 2 minutes and 33 seconds when I'm like walking through and explaining it to someone. But it takes about a couple hours of work before that, before I jump in and actually do that. Right, so I would be sitting there thinking a lot of questions to myself before I jump in. So I call it, we call it our stakeout method. So I was like, imagine if you were going to someone's house and you're like peeking through their windows, like a pair of binoculars, and you're like literally staking them out, like the police do, like the cops, right? Writing down what TV shows would they be watching? What have they got on their dinner table? Are they married? Are they single? Like, what are they interested in? What's keeping them up at night? What are the problems that are going through their head? I do a full analysis like that before I would even jump into there. So, as I said before, like someone told me originally, you need to do a lot of research when it comes to marketing and advertising. It's like, cool. So every time I do a lot of research, think about it. Think about that person. What's their pain points? What's their problems? What's their frustration? Why would someone want to buy underwater photography? You know, maybe they're like me and they used to have aquariums and they like underwater stuff. Who knows? But you got to think about all those things. Then when you think about all those things, and you look at what websites do they visit, you think about all that stuff before you jump onto Facebook, so my computer's not even open, I'm just writing stuff down. That is what gives me my leverage and my ammo when I then go into look at my interest-based targeting. Because then it's like, cool. Like, I'll type in underwater magazines. I'll type in just underwater photography. I'll start to think of what would be something that would interest these people. Right? And they're going to have to be in a nice house, maybe, if they want to buy my expensive stuff. So I'm only going to target suburbs that are like Netherlands, Dalkeith, Cottesloe, blah, blah, blah. They're going to target, you know, the Golden Triangle. That's where I'm going to hit. Because I know that they're probably going to spend more money. So to answer your question, interest-based targeting works very well. Again, Facebook would argue that point with me. They would tell you to do general targeting. I don't recommend that. But then once you go onto Facebook and you start typing those things in, they'll also then give you recommendations. They'll give you suggestions. Because there's a whole bunch of, I'll say, hidden interests, which aren't there unless you're typing in certain keywords, and then it will suggest other ones to you. So once you do enough homework and you spend, like I said, like spend a lot of time, worst case scenario, if you are not that mechanically minded where you can kind of think through those processes yourself, choose and find one of your ideal customers, take them out for a beer or a coffee, ask them some questions. What do you watch on TV? What do you like? What magazines do you read? Just like interview them, right? Mm-hmm. And then you get enough information to go back and plug into Facebook. So hopefully that answers the question there for you, sir.
Yeah. So like when you're setting up an ad and it says audience too specific, is that a thing or?
Kind of, like I would more look at, not that my audience is too specific, there's a little bar that I look at to see if I'm on point or not. So on the right-hand side, it'll have like your reach, and it'll have like 0 to X, or like 100 to 1,000, whatever it might be. As long as the budget that I'm spending is no more than halfway up that blue bar, I don't mind if it's too specific. Because it means I'm not going to burn through the money I'm going to spend, and it's going to give me a good amount of reach. So I might only be spending $1 a day on that ad because it is too specific. There's like 2,000 people in the audience, but it's still going to be getting enough reach for Facebook to do its thing.
And you can run like 10 of those.
Exactly.
Yeah. With different target markets. That's pretty cool. Any more questions, guys? Yep, down the back, right behind you, Gemma.
Hey, Kim. My question is about, I think, a bit more broader about Facebook. So latest research shows that the Facebook user base is kind of decreasing between the 12 to 34 range, especially. If you're a new business, first of all, how do you go about that? And generally, what are your thoughts around the whole decreasing of user base?
Yeah, Yeah, well, again, there's certain proportions of the market, right? So 12 to 34, it's like, do you sell to 12 to 34 year olds? If not, first of all, no problem, doesn't matter. But if you do, and sell a bit younger, what you probably find is that if you look at then the Instagram like suite of products, you probably find that that's actually increasing. They gave me stats, and I can't remember because I only literally got them yesterday, but the amount of view time that goes on a mobile phone is something ridiculous per day. But most of that is now coming from stories and on Instagram. So I would still get really good at the fundamentals of ads, and I'd be running all my ads on Instagram if my target audience was sub 35. Over 35, especially probably over 50 and over 60, you actually find that more people are going to Facebook because they're like, oh, I want to know what my kids are doing. Right, they're going and logging on and connecting and getting on there. So that user base is actually increasing there. Because a lot of people forget that when you're running, especially running Facebook ads, well, Facebook own Facebook, Messenger, Instagram, WhatsApp, right? They have an audience network, which apparently also shows up on Tinder. So they own all the ad placements on Tinder.
What?
Yeah, exactly. So if you're a single person, you're like, yes, do my niche homework and you can run ads on there for leads. Right? So something to think about. So I'll think about which platform that your audience is on based on the age bracket, and then I would choose the platform of the Facebook suite of products, because again, it's still the cheapest, arguably, still the simplest in my eyes. I don't think that's going to change for at least the next 3 to 5 years before lots of money get into the platform. So if I'm to give you like a heed or a word of warning, at the moment in Australia, $7 billion is spent digitally across the whole digital suite of the internet. And there's $7 billion in advertising spent externally, TV, radio, billboards, etc. I'm hesitating to guess, and I'm going to take a stab, that $7 billion is going to come into those platforms. So that means that the ad cost could easily double, and the numbers are very similar if you look at US, UK, some parts of Asia as well. So the cost could double in the next 3 to 5 years, is an assumption that I'm making. So I'm going very hard at the moment to catch my audience, do engagement, get people to know me as much as possible, and my business and brand.
And is Facebook like making any big moves? Because you're a partner, like I know you can only talk about so much, but like, is there any acquisitions that are notable that will affect what you do?
No acquisitions, but they are adding on more product suites. So they have already released Facebook Dating.
Right? Facebook Dating.
Facebook Dating came out in their last one, so it's like, cool. And it's not that everyone knows that you're single and you're dating and you're trying to pick up people from Facebook, but it's like similar to a...
It's like an Ashley Madison thing, what?
I don't know what that is, but I have no idea.
It's some married people,
I think. Yeah. Look, I haven't used any of the Tinders and whatnot, but I'm assuming it's pretty similar to those.
You just swipe.
Like, cool, you find people, but it finds people that you're connected with. And it's kind of more like, I would say more like a matchmaking, because it's like, oh, based on all the people that are on Facebook that you're connected to, here are you, you're single looking, you have similar interests, based on all the million pieces of information we have on here.
That's cool, yep.
There's two of you that could be a good match over there.
I might have to get Facebook on my phone. Any more questions? Yep. Gemma, can we just run down the front here? The microphone's mainly so the video picks it up. What's your name?
Natalie.
Hi, Natalie.
I once ran an ad probably about 2 years ago now. I did all the things that you told me to. And we got 108 quality leads. We sold 8 products. And we made $12,000. I ran that ad again a month later and crickets. We put more money on it the second time, but it didn't work. And is it because it was already seen by my audience, or was it that I needed to then dig down and retarget?
Yes and no. So depending on audience sizes and things like that, without me looking at that exact data, I couldn't tell you that specifically. But I will tell you the biggest one that I find is that if you have a campaign that works, never turn it off. Because what happens is you reset all of the learning that Facebook's done. So nowadays, even if you make a change to a campaign that they call a significant change, which is an increase or a decrease in spend by 30 or 40%, so increase in spend by 30%, you can decrease, but if you change anything to your ad or anything like that, you reset all the learning. And that's been in the works for about the last 3 years. So that would be the first thing that would come to my mind as well. Well, now they've gone back and restarted again, and they're probably not going to show it to the same people they did last time, because like, those people have already seen it. So they're going to try and find a different portion of the pie that you set, which might not have been buyers. So if you ever have a campaign that's working, very worst case, you turn it down to a dollar. you can spend a dollar a day and let it tick over if you're inundated with leads and things like that. But if you turn it off, it's like you're going to be in for a bad time because you've got to start all over again. And this is my just assumption from what I've looked at and seen in accounts, is that of the portion of the pie you were targeting, they go for a different portion. Because you hit those people already, which then means that they, like, that could have been the only buyer portion potentially, or they're in the lead portion that wanted what you had, and you said, I'm going to pull the money away from your Facebook. And they're like, not today, no, they're not going to give you any more leads. That's my assumption, but there could be a few other things in there as well.
Any more questions? Okay, we've got
on the ads thing. So what about like post engagement and things like that? Like you've had a good, would that be the same as like running an ad, like even just your likes campaign? Is that the same method? Just drop it.
Exactly.
Is that what, wow, what a mind blown. That's unreal.
If anything is working, it's like, I have so many ads, every single podcast episode I ever do, still run. I just run them $1 a day. Grant Cardin was the very first episode we released on my show. I'm still running ads to it, to people that like Grant Cardone, so I still get lots of views every single day. I probably get 1,500 views on my Facebook page video of that, and I just drop it to $1.
Wow.
I'll keep going.
Mind blown.
Interesting. So I've got one more question in the middle here, Gemma. What's your name?
Ash.
What's up, Ash?
How are we? I'm just wondering, do you use bid caps and cost caps, and how do you work out what the best amount is?
Not really. Purely because I base everything off of the result that I'm looking for. You can use bid caps, you can use cost caps. The only thing that I would ever cap is at the moment when I test, this is a little bit technical, but at the moment you can set your budgets where you set your audience, really nice and easy. Then moving it to you to set the campaign level, so Facebook's going to determine where they spend it. I will set caps on how much I am going to let them spend per ad set, but I don't do any other sort of capping because I kind of, the way I do things, I fight against the algorithm a little bit, technically speaking, if you want to say that. So I want to leave some things open to it. In Facebook's ideal world, you would say, it's $100 at the campaign level, here's my 5 ad sets, here's 5 ads, I'm not going to target anyone, I'm going to have general targeting, I'm going to have leave all the caps and everything like that exactly the same and away you go. That's their ideal world, and that's what their algorithm is conditioned for at the moment. So by not putting those things in, could be ignorance or not blissful ignorance, but I'm hoping that I'm at least getting a little bit of the benefit of the algorithm, considering that I am putting in targeting metrics, I am being quite hard on how I structure my bidding and things like that. I only put 1 ad per ad set. I'm very specific in the way that I do it, so by not doing those things, I hope that I get at least a little bit of the algorithm love.
Cool.
Got one more.
Yeah, far away.
When you try and find a target to a niche, would you go as niche as you can or kind of keep it broad? So do multiple...
Give me an example.
Engage ladies. So would you just try target by relationship or would you also add wedding dress, marriage proposal, engagement ring to increase the size?
Yeah, I would just go with engage ladies. If we did this for Chris, who's my general manager, if anyone ever gets married, there's an events company, Zephyr Events, amazing what they do. We set up one ad only targeting engaged ladies because we're like, well, we know they're for sure getting married, right? Certain, well, I mean, not certain, but we're pretty confident they're going to get married. So I would start with that because if I put everything in, like Facebook work in kind of buckets, and if you put everything in the same bucket, it becomes an or. So let's just say you had engaged people, you had wedding dresses, you had engagement, you had rings, etc. It's that or that or that.
Mm.
So you could get someone who's not engaged who just likes wedding dresses, just a wedding dress fanatic, right? They just love them. So you could have them and they're not the target audience. But you can use what Facebook has as a narrowing feature, which means engaged and they are interested in wedding dresses and they're interested in rings. But that's probably going to get too tight if you're doing something like locally for the birth.
They're probably like a competition or something, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Great question. Has everybody got value from this evening? Hands up if you've got value tonight. Awesome. Nailed it, Kim. Well done.
Yes.
There's a couple of things we need to do before we wrap up. One is we would love it if we could have a photograph with all of you guys. So when I... give the signal, we'll all like, I think what we'll do is like, it'll look like a selfie, but it won't be a selfie. So we'll get the photographer at the front here and we'll just like gather in and we'll do an awesome photograph together. The second thing we need to do is there's a bar downstairs and we're going to go for a drink. So you're If you're up for a drink, you're welcome to come and join us at the bar.
I mean,
Kim, you're up for those two things?
Easy sell, guys.
Okay.